What is up, everybody? This is the Sharp Angles Podcast. I am your host, Raymond Summerlin, back again, back for yet another podcast. Rich, we've been doing quite a lot of these, obviously around the NFL draft. On Thursday night, we did a round one recap with Ryan. And then on Saturday, we did an entire kind of draft recap. We did a little earlier than expected because Rich, I can't even describe the level of done you were on Saturday with the draft. And then now we're back here to talk a little bit about fantasy, talk about rookie rankings, talk about something that's, you know, right in our wheelhouse. You're in my wheelhouse. So I'm excited to do that. I guess I should say, how kind of, as we're coming out of the draft and you're doing these rookie rankings, how excited are you to be done with this part of the NFL calendar? Like when you turn those rookie rankings in, were you like, all right, thank you. All right, time to move on. Time to move on to something else. Are you done with this draft now?
No, I mean, this is always a fun period, right? Like, first of all, it's like, you know, hopium, right? Like, we want all these guys to be good. They haven't played in the NFL yet. It's exciting, right? They're new players.
Sure.
We don't know what they are. We've always got a bunch of, you know, players in the NFL that, like, we kind of, you know, been hanging on to. Or it's like, you know, some of them get eliminated this weekend, and it's kind of fun. So that's always fun. That's always a fun period. The NFL draft, I think, is fun. This next period is probably, like, where we hit, like, this large lull now. Like, we're going to have, like, this nice influx. Like, this is where your dynasty leagues are going to be the most active. Right, everyone's gonna be doing rookie drafts this weekend, next, probably the next couple weeks. Everyone's gonna be coming in kind of looking at their rosters, probably logged in all off season yet. And they're like, oh wow, like I've got four dudes that aren't even on NFL teams right now, like what am I doing? And then you'll see some trade activity in those leagues, then they'll kind of die until we get like rookie OTAs, a couple signings, you know, here and there, maybe a you know, some veterans now adding some teams that were out there. We talked on Saturday about some of like the veteran wide receivers. Like there's still some okay players that are like are ready to sign now that post like how these drafts have shaped up for a few teams, you know, guys like Tyler Boyd, Hunter Renfro, guys that are at least names, right? Like they can make things. Ezekiel Elliott signed today, like officially.
There you go.
We'll probably see Tannehill join a team eventually, right? Like guys that at least we know are functional NFL players are going to join some rosters. And then, but yeah, it's always fun, man. I think this is a real fun period. And then we just hit this like lull. Get your vacations in coming up.
Yeah, we're right into that period. You know, for us, it's a little bit different because this would be kind of that May and June window would be the time where we'd cool it a little bit. But we have the book coming out, the 2024 Warren Sharp football preview, and that's what you and I move just full speed into doing that book. And so that's we'll be occupying our time for the next month and a half. So you get to the end of it and you go, all right, yeah, we're done with the draft. We got that team need series finished. We got all of our, you know, evaluations done. We're feeling pretty good about where our rookie rankings sit. And then you're like, oh yeah, now the book's here. And it's just the NFL, man, they don't give up. And they're now thinking about what Goodell wants to move another week and get us to President's Day, right? With the with the Super Bowl, which are they still going to have the combine that kind of last week in February? Is there going to be any space between the Super Bowl and combine anymore? Like it's all become compact together. And it's been interesting. It's been a run. Either way, we're gonna have a lot of stuff available. We already have a lot of stuff available at Sharp Football Analysis on the draft. You can find draft grades from Ryan McChrystal. You can find a too early mock draft from Brendan Donahue. You can find the most valuable draft classes from Warren Sharp. There's a ton of great stuff over there about the draft. You can find, like I mentioned at the top, our recap podcast of the draft. You can find that on the podcast. You also find it on YouTube. Go to YouTube, search Warren Sharp, and you'll find that. And the other thing you'll find on the site is Rich's rookie rankings, which are part of our Sharp Football draft kit. You know, I was excited. We got the rookie rankings in, and, you know, this is the time. Like you said, this is when people really start paying attention and people really started joining in on the draft kit. So, you know, we're excited about that and excited for people to see what you have there. What we wanted to do today is kind of hit on a few interesting players and then maybe talk a little bit at the end about basic, just general overall strategy as we head into rookie drafts. Because like you said, if they haven't started already, we're heading that way for sure. So I want to get started with Roma Dunze. And Roma Dunze is somebody we talked about a little bit after round one and that kind of round one recap podcast. But I wanted to expand on it a little bit because you know, we looked at where he landed with the Bears. That overall probably is going to be a good situation if Caleb Williams ends up being worthy of the number one pick. But he's also walking into a situation with DJ Moore and with Keenan Allen and with Cole Kmet. And so you look at your rookie rankings, he's currently sits third, and that makes sense. I don't think you could have him anywhere else. But it also kind of feels like we're walking into a Jaxon Smith-Njigba situation. And I don't know if, like, if I have that pick at number three, I feel like I'm trying to trade out of there, because I just don't know if Odunze's, even no matter how talented he is, could he be in a situation where 2 years from now he's still not a startable fantasy asset? And if that's the case, and that's what you use number three overall rookie pick on, you're feeling a little bit hard done by that.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, a lot of people used 101 on that on Jaxon Smith-Njigba last year, but I do think that's as far as the comp to Jaxon Smith-Njigba goes, is this year one. Is this year one potential target crunch? Because here's the difference: Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Rome Odunze play different positions. They are listed as wide receiver fantasy football, but they're going to play different positions. One of the biggest problems with Jaxon Smith-Njigba going back to last year was his college profile, and then what happened to be his year one role in the NFL always required him to have increased target value. Like he was always a guy that projected to be a guy that had to get a lot of targets to churn out fantasy points. That is not necessarily the case for Rome Odunze. You know, if Rome Odunze ends up with the 93 targets that Jaxon Smith-Njigba had in year one, he's going to score a lot more fantasy points than Jaxon Smith-Njigba did as a rookie by default of something we talk about all the time. It's kind of like a hallmark of the show now. Like, he's going to be getting targets that are more saturated in that fantasy fat, man, those high calorie targets that he's going to get. So, like, you look at Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I mean, he only averaged 6 air yards per target last year, 25th out of 27, you know, rookie wide receivers, 36% of his targets behind the line of scrimmage. Those are not the targets Rome Odunze is going to be getting. It's funny if you want to draw like parallels of like projecting the 2023 Seattle Seahawks onto the 2024 Chicago Bears, who did hire Shane Waldron. Like, the guy who you would say might get kind of squeezed out in this situation based on role would be Keenan Allen. But I don't think that you can also project that onto this team, because it's a different quarterback. It's a different style of quarterbacks, different style of wide receivers. You know, Keenan Allen has a proven target earner. But I mean, Odunze does also, like, where he wins does gel with kind of like where Caleb wants to win and where he wanted to win in college as well. You know, Caleb is a guy that wants to extend plays, do a little big game hunting, a little bit of himself. He's not necessarily like kind of a check down guy. So it's like probably another run where DeAndre Swift, like, we're never going to probably see that receiving ability like DeAndre Swift kind of showed earlier in his NFL career. You know, last year he went to the Eagles, who just don't throw to running backs, played with a mobile quarterback. He's playing with another quarterback that wants to extend plays and doesn't check down a lot. We saw this with Marshawn Lloyd at USC, who had good receiving efficiency per target, but also just didn't get a lot of targets because that's not Caleb's game, man. Caleb is going to scramble a little bit more. He's going to extend plays. He wants to push the ball down the field, and that lines up with Odunze. Now, what happens with Odunze in context of this draft class, though, is where a lot of people, I think, were considering him near Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison, is this does distance him from those two players who walk into clear alpha roles in the NFL. They're going to be the number one wide receiver targets on their team. And what that does in turn offers more of a potential arbitrage opportunity for guys like Brian Thomas or Xavier Worthy to be near Rome Odunze, where he was distance from those guys pre-draft. So, like you said, having 103 now does become a little more nebulous with Odunze, where you're still high on him, you're high on the ceiling potential, you like the fit, you like the player, but it does open up the gap now between him and Marv, and then closes the gap between, I think, Brian Thomas and Xavier Worthy, or they close the gap on him a little bit, which does you know, kind of like put you into like a little bit of a quandary of saying, like, all right, now I have to thread the needle, whereas like I thought I had like more of a safer player.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at it kind of in tiers, and I don't know if Odunze is in the same tier as someone like Brian Thomas and Xavier Worthy, because obviously he was a top 10 pick, which does mean something. There's a difference between being a top 10 pick and a first round pick. That draft capital does mean something. And I mean, obviously, like, Odunze is a player, and like you said, he does have those full fat, those beef tallow targets. He's going to get them because of just the way he plays and the kind of profile that he has. But I also think about, you know, if he has a really good season at 90 targets, does that season look like Courtland Sutton's season from last year? And if that's the case, then, you know, that he's going to be usable as a rookie. But then in year two, you say, well, in year two, Keenan Allen's going to be gone. And that may very well be true. And if that's true, you're going to be really excited, I think. But the argument we had with Jackson Smith and Jigba, and the reason I bring this up and make these, you know, comparisons, is the argument with Jackson Smith and Jigba was, well, Tyler Lockett's going to be gone next year. Well, here we are. And Tyler Lockett's not gone. Tyler Lockett's still going to be there for another season. And as you get further into these careers and, you know, further kind of in wide receivers, obviously not as important for that early career production as running backs, but you still want to see, you know, early career usability. And so I just, it adds some concerns. Now, Roma Dunze still should be the number three pick, the 103 in non-Superflex drafts. I'm not making that argument at all. But I think your point, like, I think thinking about it in tiers really is a good way to think about it. Whereas he may have been maybe not in that first tier with Neighbors and Harrison, he'd be pretty close to it. And now he's much closer to that other one. And that creates a loss of value for that third pick without even changing the player that you're drafting or without even changing, you know, where you're picking it. And that's, you know, it's a tough kind of a tough situation.
I'll get to the pros. Yeah. I also want to spin this Bear situation into just kind of a larger dynasty talk too, like about that overall situation. Cause like, you know, we talked about Adunze, like even if Keenan Allen's gone, DJ Moore is still going to be there. And that's another element here, because we've seen guys that we know moonlight as wide receiver ones, T. Higgins, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle. And, you know, I would also put these rookies into actual dynasty rankings as well for people this week too. So you could see where I slotted them in terms of overall ranks. And I think that's like the bucket he has to fit in because of DJ Moore being there, you know, also after Keenan Allen. And then also what this does to DJ Moore, right? Like DJ Moore is a player we've consistently been high on. He's basically always cost like wide receiver one-ish in dynasty. And he's been like, he's been in and out as a wide receiver one in terms of cost in redraft leagues based on his career. And he's never really paid off when he's gotten there. And he's there again now. And DJ Moore last year is a guy who had 28% of team targets, had no target competition. And now what is he going to look like in this situation? You know, Keenan Allen joins the team and now Roma Dunze joins the team and he's got a rookie quarterback. So now DJ Moore also has increased fragility, I think, as well, where, you know, gamers aren't probably talking about it enough from that angle as well.
I think you brought up the old saying from our mutual old friend, Mr. Rumford, Johnny. I hope you're doing well, Johnny, about like, you'll buy the syrup. You'll buy the thing that keeps all of these together, who is Caleb Williams, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you look at this situation, you go, all right, Caleb Williams has DeAndre Swift. You mentioned DeAndre Swift didn't get thrown to a lot last year. He also wasn't as efficient last year as he had been early in his career with those throws. The types of targets he was getting almost certainly, you know, played a role in that, but it's something to pay attention. But he does still have Swift. He's got these three wide receivers. He's got Cole Kmet. And so you look at all of that, you think for a rookie quarterback, the situation for him is as good as it's possibly going to get. And that's why you get excited about Caleb Williams, you know, in Superflex, obviously we know where he's going to go. You get excited about him even in, you know, redraft leagues, especially in best ball leagues where you can have a safety net behind him if something kind of goes wrong. But I mean, everything about Caleb Williams, you have to get excited about because of all these players, but it does hurt all of those players that they're all playing together. And so it's just it's an interesting and an odd situation. I did want to move on to Brian Thomas and Xavier Worthy. You have them 4 and 5. There's obviously no big difference between them. I'm not asking you to split hairs between them, but you did put Brian Thomas ahead of Xavier Worthy, which I think is interesting because I think I'd have them flipped. What kind of was the deciding factor for you? And again, we're talking about 4 and 5. It is, but it is an interesting kind of discussion about what puts Brian Thomas a little bit ahead of Worthy for you.
Yeah, I think it's just archetype of wide receiver, right? Like if Brian Thomas hits his apex outcome, it's just going to be, you know, no pun intended, it's just going to be worth more than Xavier Worthy's. Like, that's all it is, right? Like I had these guys pre-draft in the same tier. Like, so like, again, like you said, they are very close. They were close for me coming in. And it's just like, that's just like the splitting of the hairs. It's just what archetype of receiver Brian Thomas is and what that can mean for fantasy football versus, you know, Xavier Worthy, who does, you know, still like, we're excited about this. I think Xavier Worthy had the most optimal outcome he could have had, like in the NFL draft, but we're still going to have to do a little bit of kind of like wondering, like, is there going to be development for him? Like this is, for us being the fastest wide receiver in this class, he was not good on any downfield targets in college. Now he's going to be playing Patrick Mahomes. We'll see how that turns around. But like, he was a guy that was like kind of spoon fed targets in year one, has a lot of overlap to where right now Rashee Rice, you know, pending what kind of games he's going to miss, and Travis Kelce win in this offense, right? Like those are the two guys that command those types of targets in this offense. And both were huge target earners last year. And then he's going to have Hollywood Brown now in contention for like these targets that are 10 yards plus downfield, which he already wasn't good on in college. So like, that's just it, splitting the hairs. But I do think this was as good of an outcome for Xavier Worthy. And if you did take him 104, I do think that from a 2024 perspective, if you're just looking at it like that, like, hey, I need points in 2024, like Xavier Worthy would probably be like your better bet between the two. But yeah, just big picture dynasty. It was just like, I use the archetype of the receiver to define like the difference.
Lewis. Yeah. Lewis, you got a smile out of me. Worthy Sky Moore Spider-Man meme. Yeah. I mean, maybe, but he could also be, you know, Rashee Rice, if we're looking at this situation where, you know, we don't know what Rice's long-term suspension situation is. And like you said, Rich, if I'm in a just redraft league, I'm more interested in Worthy than Thomas, because Thomas, I mean, has a lot of competition for targets right now with Christian Kirk, with Gabe Davis, with Evan Ingram, with, you know, Zay Jones, whatever, you know, for whatever that's worth. But I mean, I think the situation, just where he's landing and how we feel about the offense in Kansas City for Worthy, that's great. And you mentioned ideal situation. I think you're probably right. The one other one would be in Miami with one of Tyreek Hill or Jalen Waddle not there. Can you imagine him in that offense?
Yeah, I mean, Mike McDaniel probably would have loved to add him if they had that kind of capital to invest. I mean, you gotta love Mike McDaniel, man. I mean,
yeah,
you see him fit, like, dude, like, he's like the person, like, when you used to get like the Madden franchise with your friends and like, I'm sorting by one attribute. I just want the fastest humans. Can I just have I want to put just all the fastest humans on the football field. That's like all his goal is. And you gotta respect it, man.
Yeah, I was mentioning to you, I play a game on my phone called Retro Bowl, which is like Tecmo Bowl, except you get to like add players over time. And literally the only thing I scout, there's one thing I scout on that game, and it is speed. That is it. I see what their speed is, and then I make all my decisions based on that. And I really appreciate that I share that with one of the better coaches in the NFL. I want to get on to talk about Brock Bowers, who you have number 6 overall. I want to say, from just like a process perspective, I always have a hard time taking a tight end that high. I don't value tight ends. If you're not in a tight end premium league, then it's hard for me to value tight ends in a way that I get that excited about it. Because even from like a ceiling outcome, if they turn into Travis Kelce, then you definitely have a difference maker. But if they turn into kind of like that TE4, TE5 every year, you know, what are they doing for me? And so I really have a hard time drafting tight ends that high. And then I look at Brock Bowers and where he ended up with the Raiders. And obviously things are going to change long term, but you don't like the quarterback situation with the Raiders from the short term. You don't like that he has two target earners at wide receiver in Devontae Adams and Jacoby Myers. You don't like that they just spent a draft pick on a tight end last year, who obviously didn't make a lot of noise as a rookie, but you know, rookie tight ends generally don't. And so, you know, the fact that two of them did last year shouldn't take away the fact that most of the time it takes some tight ends some time to get used to the NFL. And I look at all that stuff and it's really hard for me to get invested in Brock Bowers, knowing that he does have the skill set to be an elite fantasy tight end. All of it just kind of makes me a little bit wary of him. And I don't know. I think I'd probably take some quarterbacks ahead of him where you have them at number 6. So what ended up with you there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a default in this class. Like, you already were talking about being wary of 103. Getting to 104, 105, exactly. 106. I mean, something I've been harping on the entire length of this process was this rookie class was not probably as good as people thought it was. It was just really good at the top. But when it comes down to when you're drafting Brock, when you're in the spot, right? Let's just say you're at 106 and beyond. What it comes down to is basically Brock Bowers or one of the two quarterbacks, and we're talking one quarterback leagues. So like, you could talk to, maybe this is where gamers start to say, I need a running back. Are you going to start considering James Brooks? But when it comes down to, are you going to take one of these like wide receiver two profile guys that go from this point or beyond versus like literally arguably one of the most prescient tight ends we've had in the past 20 years of football? And that's where the gap is. It's like, it's hard to move Bowers down below those guys, right? From like a football stance, like, because one, if Brock Bowers does hit that ceiling and he has a tight end one through three season, that could be worth more than just like the best Ladd McConkey season, the best Ricky Purcell season, the best Xavier Leggett season, like, right? Like, so like, that's what it is. So like, and I think when you look at it too, like we do tend to overvalue initial landing spot a little bit. And actually when I took like a 10,000 foot view, like days removed, I don't think the landing spot's as bad for Brock Bowers. Like you're definitely not like enthralled by it. Like he's not going to play with like an awesome quarterback or anything, but like, This is a regime that didn't draft Michael Mayer. Michael Mayer did nothing as a rookie. Michael Mayer is not going to roadblock Brock Bowers. He's just not.
Do you remember at this time last year when we said Austin Hooper's not going to roadblock Michael Mayer? Anyway, continue.
No, I mean, but listen, Michael Mayer was like a guy that came with a lot of questions like last year.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. Like no, you're right.
Yeah. We're talking about a guy that he's the only two-time Mackey winner ever. All these players that got drafted from Georgia, as an 18-year-old, he had more yards than all of them. He was on a team with A.D. Mitchell. He was on a team with Ladd McConkey. He was on a team with Jermaine Burton and, like, was better than all these guys. I just think it's a default to where this class is. Like, how could you, like, you said, if I'm on the clock and you're like, I'll take one of the quarterbacks, like, in a one-quarterback league, like, sure. I mean, like, what are you really going to get, though? Like, I just think it's a default to where this class is. Like, you can't really, like, you don't have to feel good about taking a tight end. And I don't really always, I play like you. Like, last year, I ended with a lot of Sam LaPorta, who was the tight end three. You think about, like, Travis Kelce, who was, like, the apex of all, like, tight ends that people go to. In that draft class, Travis Kelce was the tight end four. Like, you know, you get that. I've always found more value playing the position that way, too. But I also have to rank these guys in a linear order. And from an aspect of that, like, I can't encourage gamers to take Ladd McConkey over Brock Bowers, right? Like, I can't, because the best version from a ceiling standpoint, Brock Bowers and his best outcome for fantasy football is probably going to just matter more than those guys and their best outcomes, right? Like, so, like, yeah, as if I have 106, I also want to move down. It's something I've talked about before we even got to this point. Like, if I had 106 plus, I've been wanting to trade those picks for future first. I said before even the draft, before we got landing spots, and now it's gonna be harder to do this, that if I had 106 or beyond, I would take any future first for it easy. Like, I've already done that. I've already moved it and I would have been out. And it's gonna be harder to do that now post draft with some of these landing spots and some uneasiness. But like, yeah, I would love to move down if I have these spots as well. But that's the rationale why he's there. Like, that's as clearly as I can lay it out.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I obviously I'm looking for talking points for us to discuss because I when you look at the linear rankings, you're right, I probably would take Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels ahead of him. That probably where,
but
I
let's just say, like, but you have 106 107 and you're like, you have Lamar Jackson already, or like, you know,
yeah, then like, you're taking Brock Bowers because you're not taking like you said, you're not taking Keon Coleman ahead of him, you're not taking McConkey or Leggett. If you're super running back needy, and we want to talk about Jonathan Brooks here in a second, if you're super running back needy, maybe you take Jonathan Brooks there.
He's probably the most interesting guy that from a conversation stance we could talk about, like, in this first round area.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk about him, but we were going to talk about strategy a little later, but I do think I want to get to your kind of strategy viewpoint of this. And like you said, the most ideal situation here is to move down. That's not always possible. I think the Broncos figured that out when they drafted Bo Nix, right? It's not always possible to move down, but I think your overall kind of point that you made in the article about how we don't second round and on group of wide receivers, and there's a ton of them. There were so many wide receivers drafted. We can't, it's really going to be really hard to identify a specific wide receiver in that group that is going to hit. Maybe you're convinced that you know that Adonai Mitchell is going to hit. Maybe you're convinced that you know that Jalen Polk is going to hit, right? But the reality is that hitting on those guys is going to be hard. And so the point you made, and the one that I agree with, is if you can move down from like 106, from 108, and get multiple second round picks, or as like you said, a second round pick and then a pick next year, that to me is so ideal because I can make cases for all of these guys. I can't say, okay, this is, I can't give a Marvin Harrison treatment and say that this guy is definitely going to be it. And so you just want as many swings as possible. And hopefully, you know, one of them goes over the fence.
Yeah, 100%. Like you said, you're trying to thread the needle, and we all have overconfidence in NFL players, right? like that we have multiple year samples that don't hit. And we've got players that have never played in the NFL. They're going in completely new situations. There's just a lot of fluidity. And then also, like, we've got a lot of guys, and you can go back to pre-draft and, you know, read about this. Like, we had a lot of guys that had very just similar profiles, like very similar production profiles and arc from an archetype stance. Like, they're very similar, and they all kind of land. It's not like any of these guys landed in like spots that were like, you're just like, yes, this is like automatic. There are guys that land in spots where we can make, like, if we're splitting hairs and you're forced, like, you can't trade this pick. You have 109 and just nobody is helping you. You can't get out. And you're like, well, I have to make a pick. That's going to happen to gamers as well. But I do want to, like you said, like, I want to have multiple bites at the apple. Like, there's a lot of guys that are very similar. And instead of just starting to say like, hey, I'd have all the answers, which I never do, I want to say, like, leave me two or three of these guys and just let me throw them at the wall. And hopefully I'm the guy that luck boxes into the gamer that luck boxes into the breakout or the more productive player. So that's how I want to particularly play this wide receiver class. I have been constant, like, when nothing has changed post-draft, I think a lot of people have gotten their post-draft now, that after those big three wide receivers, like, this wide receiver class was largely nebulous and not, like, intoxicating. And I think that's where a lot of people have come now, 3 days removed from the draft.
And even if you have your favorites, if you could move around and get those favorites and take a shot, like, somebody I will have on a lot of dynasty teams is Roman Wilson. I really like Roman Wilson. I am not as infatuated with the offensive situation he's going to, but I think he's going to fit well into that offensive system. And I like Roman Wilson as a player. Ryan McChrystal had him as his wide receiver 4 in the overall draft. And I take Ryan's, you know, opinion on those kinds of things pretty seriously. And so I'm going to have a lot of Roman Wilson, but I'm not confident that Roman Wilson is definitely going to be, you know, definitely going to be better than Troy Franklin or Malachi Corley or, you know, whatever, pick a name, right? I'm not that confident in it. And so you just kind of have to hedge your bets a little bit, I think, on some of these guys.
Yeah, and the wild thing, like you talked about, was like, you typically will see, like, you know, draft capital delineation from like tiers that were pre-draft highly, right? Like, people will be like, I had this guy, and this guy in the same tier, but then draft capital really has a lot of disparity between those players, and it's easy to kind of then sort those guys out. I mean, we had all those wide receivers go 14 picks away from each other. Brian Thomas, Worthy, Keon Coleman, Pearsall, Ladd McConkey, Xavier Leggett, like all those guys, Jalen Polk, they all went in one bucket where, like, they didn't get any delineation in terms of capital.
Yeah, and I mean, it was, what, 16 in the first three rounds, which is, you know, a massive number. And then we had a lot at the top of the fourth round, too, if you want to, you know, kind of two or three more at the top of the fourth round, if you want to kind of throw that in there. And so, yeah, they were all just together. And so I think I was hoping the NFL would do it for me and would, like, spread these guys out and would say, okay, so this is how we view it. But I had no even thoughts of Ricky Pearsall going in the first round. You know, there were rumors and everything like that, but like that, so that changes things obviously with him going there. And so it's an odd situation. You brought up Jonathan Brooks. I do want to talk about him because I think he is, like you said, I think he's the most interesting kind of these first round potential picks in rookie drafts. I guess the question is, and we may have already answered this, how high can an RB needy team take him before you think you're giving up too much value? We talked about there at 106, maybe. Is that kind of the limit of how high you're going to take him before you feel like you're really losing value on, you know, a guy that certainly has some question marks heading into his rookie season?
I think the way it lays out, right, like from just like where we're going to see like typical ADP value shake out, that's probably the line. But I will say this about Jonathan Brooks. Like, there's no doubt we can come back to this draft class 3 years from now and look back at the way this ADP went and say, like, he probably was the third best player in the rookie class, right? Like, that exists in a range of outcomes for Jonathan Brooks. Now, he came with lower end draft capital for the RB1. He's coming off the injury. So, like, we have to price in, like, the floor as well. It's not like he was a first round pick, right? Like, we can't just assume that. But I do think he does have in his range of outcomes to say, like, oh, he was a better rookie pick than Brock Bowers. He was a better rookie pick than Brian Thomas. He was a better rookie pick than Xavier Worthy or any of that gaggle wide receivers we just kind of highlighted. That absolutely exists in the range of outcomes. Like, this is a running back that has a three down profile. He's going to a head coach that literally has told us he's going to run the football more than we want him to. Like he's openly said, I'm going to run the football more than we want to. We saw last year the kind of workload he gave to a guy like Rashad White, who wasn't even good with the opportunities he had last year, right? Like that wasn't a good running team. But do we see Miles Sanders get released or moved on at this point? Like, do we see Chuba Hubbard come back? Like, all these things exist. So, like, you've got to kind of price all that in as well. So, like, he becomes a player that, like, you kind of pick your spots with. But I absolutely think when we come back to, like, remove years from this class, like, there's an opportunity, like, for him to be one of the better rookie picks in this first round. Because here's the beauty of Dynasty, right? When you talk about him in the context of the class, and this is why I like Dynasty football so much more versus redraft. What is the value of one potential top six running back scoring season versus like a handful of RB or wide receiver two seasons, right? Like that's the fun part about Dynasty, because historically, like just from a positional leverage stance or impacting the outcome of a fantasy team, one running back one season is worth more than any wide receiver two seasons, be let alone five or six of them. And that's what makes it fun. That's, I think, what makes Jonathan Brooks such a fun conversation piece. I think that's what makes like Dynasty football so great. And, you know, kind of gonna put some people in like a box here, especially if they need running backs. But like you said, you don't want to like spite your value either. Like you might be a team that needs, you might be at 103 and have a dire need for a wide receiver or running back, that is. But like, you've got to try to find a way to like get back into like a couple picks, right? Like a couple picks, and then try to maybe get them. But like, it's, you need a dance partner too. Like we said, like all these things have to play out for you. So it's a real tough spot to be in, but I think that's what makes Jonathan Brooks such a fun conversation piece in this class.
So I have two things I kind of want to add to what you were talking about. The first is, so I play in a dynasty league that this is our like 22nd year or something like that. We've been in this league for a very, very long time. A bunch of people that, you know, I grew up with, and in a very Southern way, a bunch of people I went to church with. There's a good Southern reference for you in the podcast. We got to get one in there every time. But that league tends to be a little more like what I consider a normal home league. And in that league, running backs tend to get pushed up because that's kind of, you still have this view of, you know, running backs being important. And so I do wonder if Jonathan Brooks, if the drafts we see happening over the next like couple weeks are not as indicative of what rookie drafts that are held later will be, and people that maybe aren't as serious about the dynasty format. And so that's something to consider for sure about kind of where Brooks ends up. The second thing I want to talk about, how important is an RB6 season versus a bunch of wide receiver two seasons? I actually think, and you mentioned earlier that we overvalue landing spot. I actually take the opposite approach to this, and this is just my dynasty strategy. This is the way I approach dynasty. I think there is a far too large view on what might happen in 3 years versus trying to predict what will happen this year. And that's, we already can't predict what's going to happen this year. We're not good at it. We can do our best, but we already are bad at predicting what's going to happen this year. Trying to predict what's going to happen in 3 years is just impossible. We have no idea. Everything can change by that point in time. And I think people get stuck in trying to play for the ceiling, the 3 years from now ceiling of what could happen to a player. And sometimes it works out. Like, obviously, this can work out. But instead, I think if you focus a lot more on the short term in dynasty, you will have better long term success, because you are going to actually have winning teams, and winning teams is what you're going for. And so I think that I actually think landing spot plays a big role. I think the first 2 years on your dynasty roster is important, and what they're able to provide you in those first 2 years, and the first year especially, when that's more predictable, is important. And so it's possible that I put, you know, far too big of a value on, you know, landing spot. But I also would much rather very often trade picks for players that are already established, than I think that these rookie picks tend to be, especially like you mentioned, not now that we actually know the players attached to them. It's so funny. That's actually a funny thought exercise. Once we know the players that are going to go there, the value of the draft picks go down. What that should tell you is that the value of the draft picks before the players were there was too high. You should probably trade them. And that's kind of the situation. That's how I approach dynasty. And so I do think these landing spots matter, but I also think, you know, there's lots of ways to approach this. I was going to say there's lots of ways to skin a cat, but that's such a terrible saying. Like, why do we say, why are we saying it's so violent? Yeah. Who knows? How do you know that there are more than one way to skin a cat? Are you skinning cats? Like, that's, That's psychopath behavior. I don't like, I'm very confused. But anyway, that's kind of my approach to Dynasty in the way that I do it.
Yeah, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that either. Like you said, playing the long game. And there's a case where we could say, like, we could be looking up in week 10 of this 2024 season, and Jonathan Brooks is actually like a RB1 in fantasy, right? Like, yeah. There's that exists in the range of outcomes too. That's what I think, like I said, like, he has just a lot of avenues to like steer different conversations, steer a lot of trains of thought for this. But like, yeah, like you said, that area of the draft, like I said, if you can get established players, by all means, that's what you should be focused on doing with these, with those picks. And you should have been before the draft.
There you go. Before the draft. So remember this for next year. Or remember this for in the season, if you have a good team and you're like, I really don't want to get rid of this 2025 first round pick. Well, if your team is good and it's going to be the 10th pick in your rookie draft, think about what the 10th pick is today and then go, am I really that bothered by this? Just something, you know, something to keep in mind. I do want to finish up the players here with Troy Franklin, who, you know, obviously had a massive draft day fall. I should say draft weekend fall, because he fell all the way into Saturday. You had him fifth among receivers in your pre-draft rankings. He's now down to wide receiver 14, number 23 overall. I assume most of that has to do with draft capital, but are you also, you know, kind of worried about where he ended up as well?
No, yeah, it's just all from an objective stance. We have to price this in, like, just the hit rate of players that go where Troy Franklin fell to and the probability of him now succeeding in the NFL. I think you can definitely make a pro case. Obviously, you have the shower narrative, that old Adam Levitan, you know, him and getting paired with Bo Nix. Like, you can paint that as a picture, or, like, say, like, even on the depth chart of the Broncos, like, there's not, like, a lot hugely in his way. But you just have to now look at a guy that, you know, went in the fourth round of the NFL draft, and he went the first pick in the fourth round, but still, you know, looking at this kind of study that I've done, you know, only 60% of all round four players get second contracts in the NFL. Well, guess what? At wide receiver, that plummets. Only 36% of all round four wide receivers in the study I did, you know, got second contracts in the NFL. Over that span, 52 round four wide receivers, 19 of them got second contracts. Guess how many of those 19 got a second contract with a team that drafted them?
Ooh, that's an interesting 7.
Nope. 2. Do you want to know who they were?
Two.
Justin Hardy and DeMarcus Robinson were the only two. We just saw Gabe Davis in that boat leave in free agency. And then you talk about from a fantasy stance, we talk about those guys. If you want to open it, well, first let's open it up to the whole day two guys. I mean, like, we'll just open it up, and only 36% of all day two wide receivers get a second contract in the NFL. Only 17% of those guys get a second deal with the team that drafted them. And for fantasy football, day three wide receivers in the entire 2000s have an 8% hit rate to have a top 24 season within years 1 through 3. So, like, we have to price all that in with Troy Franklin. Now, I will say this. He was a guy I probably wasn't going to end up with very much of in rookie drafts because of I assumed he was going to be in that gaggle of, like, you know, top 40-ish picks, right? And slide into those rookie draft spots that I said I was trying to get out of. Now that he's probably going to be like a 2-3, I'll probably just, like, throw some blind darts, like, at that area because of the profile he had entering, right? Like, he looks a lot better from an objective stance than a lot of players that are drafted where he is. So therefore I will just throw that into the bucket and say, like, all right, I got this third round rookie pick. It probably won't be good anyways. I'm going to use it on a player that at least looks better than other picks that usually go in this area. So, but we have to price in that, like, he's dead. We have to.
Yeah, no, like you laid out all the numbers. I can't believe it was two. Two is I can't believe that one of
the
two
even good. Justin they weren't Hardy. Even good players.
Like, that's the wild part to me, is that he was one of the two. But yeah, so you're right. Like, the draft capital, we have to pay attention to it. But to your point about, like, how much he's probably now going to cost in rookie drafts, we'll have to see how it all plays out. Right. Some people who really loved him pre-draft and is not going to want to change their mind on him will still reach for him, and, you know, you're not going to end up with him. But if he ends up probably where he should in rookie drafts, the likelihood of that pick turning into a great, you know, starter for your dynasty team are also relatively low. And so you can take shots on outliers there. You don't want to take a shot on extreme outliers or potentially extreme outliers in the first round, but in the end of the second round, the beginning of the third round, if you're taking a shot on an outlier, that's fine, because those picks very often fail anyway. I wish I had the I wish I had the ADP from last year up so I could see who went at the end of the second and the beginning of the third round in rookie drafts. I'm sure there's some big hits in there, but you know, it's always a bit of a crapshoot. I do want to talk kind of from that perspective, talk a little bit about strategy here. We mentioned, you know, the wide receivers. We talked a little bit about kind of how to handle Jonathan Brooks. I do want to make mention of Superflex. We have, as part of our rookie rankings, you have Superflex rankings in there. I know Superflex, you know, is becoming an even larger part of Dynasty every single year. And it's definitely an important thing to talk about. So, I mean, when we're talking about the first, you know, two picks, that seems like that's pretty locked in. But what are you doing with the rest of the quarterbacks in Superflex leagues?
Yeah, and this kind of conversation has like a couple different angles because, well, one, we've seen just the since the onset of Superflex and 2QB leagues have gained popularity, it's like overplayed, right? We see this all the time in the Scott Fish Bowl, right? Like I brought up, you know, last year, like I was in, like in my draft, I had pick 111 in the Fish Bowl and I got Christian McCaffrey, you know, and like he went after guys like Daniel Jones and like, you know, this like Trevor Lawrence, like dudes like that, like these kind of what tight end premium, what Superflex does is it makes the really good players at those positions more valuable, but it does not make the very average to good players more valuable. And people inflate very average to good players in those positions due to those formats. And that's something we haven't seen gamers like correctly calibrate for. If you do your FFPC drafts, you see this all the time. Like when you see a lot of purple on the board way before there should be purple on the board, the tight ends and those tight end premium leagues. And that happens in these super flex leagues. But also from like a rookie perspective, like their currency, these quarterbacks are currency. They don't lose year one to year two value because starting quarterbacks are a finite resource in these leagues. So they always hold a lot of positional value as well. So you kind of have to play like from an angle of like, all right, I know the rest of my league's going to value these guys, but also these guys like JJ McCarthy, Bo Nix, like these guys are not going to be like valuable in the context of the quarterback position. Like these guys, like for JJ McCarthy and Bo Nix and Michael Penix to get there. And I should Drake May too. I would include Drake May in this too, for like these guys to be like, to compete with the Josh Allens, the Jalen Hurts, like it's going to be relatively thin for those guys. Like they give you a little bit of rushing, but like those guys don't give you enough rushing. Plus they're going to have to throw almost 40 passing touchdowns a year to compete with being the QB1 overall. So like they can't even punch above like the tier, like probably their apex tier is getting to that Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow-ish tier, which I believe in the context of Superflex is the most overvalued tier. And it's the most overvalued tier too, also when you get to redraft leagues as well. Because those guys just have to run so hot to compete with the guys that give you the rushing ability. Like they have to throw 40 passing touchdowns. They have to flirt with throwing 40 passing touchdowns. And that's just a very like thin outcome. And that's why those guys are able to be arbitrage. So like when you're building your QB platoons in these two quarterback leagues, or like your QB soup, right, is what I call it. Like you're able to run down the Burrows and the Lawrences more years than not. You just are, because like they're arbitrageable. They're arbitrageable fantasy resources. They're overvalued by your gamers. So like I have the guys like McCarthy and Drake May lower than you're going to see them go in Superflex. But I also want to inherently let gamers know you have to play the currency angle, right? Like if you're on the clock at 106 in your Superflex league, you have to hunt for those teams that need quarterbacks and offer that pick to those teams. You have to say like, dude, you need Drake May. You need JJ McCarthy. Like you have to take a shot on Bo Nix. Like you have to do approach that angle as well too. So like that, that's what's fun kind of about the Superflex leagues and that context of the tier is like the currency. But like, I don't think those guys are worth those picks though, because in the context of the quarterback position, I don't really see those guys being able to separate and get to that elite tier like a Jaden Daniels or even a Caleb Williams has. So that's what's kind of fun about it.
Yeah. And I agree with your kind of that group of quarterbacks that you're talking about. And I have a dynasty team with Justin Herbert that I'm not feeling. Justin Herbert and Brock Purdy are my quarterbacks in the league. I'm not feeling great about my quarterback position right now. That tier it's far flatter all the way out to like QB 20 and QB 21 than we probably like to think it is. And so that's the point, is that you don't have to spend, you know, if you're spending that pick on Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, fair enough, right? Like we're getting a big enough bump. But if you're spending it on Justin Herbert, even, you know, especially Justin Herbert this year, then the difference between him and who you could have gotten a few rounds later, even in Superflex, is, you know, is different. And so I think it's important to think about. I think I am probably going to end up a little bit higher on JJ McCarthy just because of the situation he ended up in. However, like, if he ends up just being Kirk Cousins, that's still part of that group that you're talking about. That's part of that group of just kind of flat, kind of just a very flat tier of quarterbacks where you can get, you know, pretty analogous production from. And so I think that's certainly a fair point.
It was nice.
I want to finish. What'd you say?
Analogous. This is a nice one. I like that. I didn't have that one on analogous. My card today. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't have analogous? I don't even think that's a big word. It is an odd word. I'll give you it's
you just don't hear it. It's not one you get a lot.
Yeah, it's not one you get a lot. That's right. Thank you. Thank you, my broken brain, for pulling that one out of somewhere. I do want to finish up here with top targets. That was something you did in the rookie rankings that I thought was very good, because you talk about this all the time with rankings. Rankings are tough because you have to have Rome Odunze at third. You just do. Like, that's the way it works. You have to have Brock Bowers at sixth. That's how rankings work. But you're not maybe as excited about getting them there. And so really what is important to think about is, who am I actually targeting? And if you know who you're targeting, then that allows you to more freely move around the draft, I think, and yes, make trades that you want to make, because you don't feel like, okay, am I losing too much value? You're going, all right, this is the person I'm targeting, and this is why I'm making this move, which makes, I think, those, it makes trades a little bit easier to value. And so I think that those targets are important. So I don't want you to give them all away, but who are, say, you know, a couple, three players that you're really targeting here in these rookie rankings?
Yeah, and that's right. And that's what a lot of people lose in the context of like rankings, or even people that have to create rankings and like consumption, because it's always one of these big like hot topics for me. I feel like me and Matt Harmon did a podcast actually on Yahoo about like rankings and the fallacy and like why all of you consumers value them and you shouldn't value them to the degree that you do. But yeah, I mean, like you said, if you're trading to like certain picks, you're trying to get to certain buckets because you're saying like, yes, this is, I want Trey Benson, right? Like you can say like, I want Trey Benson, but like I have this pick. I'm not in an area where I'm going to draft him. So like you jostle your draft picks around that area to where like you would get Trey Benson at value, right? You know, guys like that. I think when it comes down to this class, like you kind of brought up his name a couple times, that I don't think people are going to like value where he was drafted in probably his landing spot because of the, you know, just the New England wide receiver, like historical FOMO. Like it's just like I'm not taking a New England wide receiver. It's a new regime, new quarterback, all that stuff. But I think people are not going to like value Jalen Polk, right? I think a lot like how Jahan Dotson wasn't kind of valued a couple years ago, like for his draft capital. And, you know, granted, year one looked good, year two looked bad. Like you're going to have that. But I think Jalen Polk's a guy that like, I don't see him really ever getting into the first round of any rookie drafts, right? He's probably going to always go after like the Purcells, the Colemans, the Ladd McConkeys. But like he was drafted right around those guys. And like opportunity exists for him, like, right? Like, and he's the type of guy that can work with a guy like Drake May. If you go back to like what Josh Downs did 2 years ago with Drake May, it's not just Drake May like can only throw bombs. Like we saw a guy, like I said, Josh Downs was had absolutely immaculate production profile his last year at North Carolina as well. So Jalen Polk's probably a guy I'm going to end up with probably more than the field, just by default of where he went in the NFL draft. Like where he's going to be from an objective bet, right? He's probably going to be like a high two. And I just feel like he's going to be a relatively kind of like layup pick there at that point. So he's a guy I'll probably draft a lot. We brought up kind of Troy Franklin, just where he's just going to look a lot better in terms of like objective picks that go where he goes. And then like that's where and then like, well, you know, like late two, round three, four is like where you start throwing these running back darts. Guys like Ray Davis could run into an opportunity in Buffalo. Like we already seen how they used James Cook, right, last year. Like James Cook got no money touches, right? So like, yep. What if Ray Davis gets some of those? What if James Cook gets hurt? Then he's immediately the RB1 in an offense with Josh Allen. Like, and then granted, Josh Allen's still going to siphon some, you know, touchdowns from that, but like that becomes an opportunity. Guys, I was just high on.
I have a stat here for you for Ray Davis off the top of my head. So last year in Buffalo, Leonard Fournette, Damian Harris, and there was another Leonard Fournette. They combined for 20 goal-to-go carries. James Cook had 12.
Yeah.
That they have made it clear what they're trying to do with that kind of secondary running back. And if that ends up being Ray Davis, who is older, and his profile isn't like spectacular, but if that ends up being like what his role is, then I think you're going to be relatively excited about where you end up with him in rookie drafts.
Yeah, and you're not trying to be bullish necessarily on these guys, especially in context of this class, but you have to look at some of these guys like Ray Davis or Kamani Vidal. Like, these guys are a play away from mattering. Like, they're a play, like the way they fell on the depth charts on their teams, like, they literally are like a play away from just like contributing a lot more than we could assume. And if you just even get 1 year out of a guy at the third or fourth round pick that is like tangible, like, you're not gonna get, like, you can't just hunt for Puka Nacuas, man. Like, those don't happen. Like, you luck box into those.
Yeah, I mean, that when I was talking about later round picks, I was trying to remember where Puka went. Did he go in the fourth?
He went in the fourth, largely undrafted in a lot of leagues. I'm gonna still throw my darts on guys I liked. Like Malik Washington's a guy, like, I'm just gonna throw a dart in the fourth round on him. Just because, you know, the Mike McDaniel factor, I was high on it.
Hope the Miami situation works.
And that's when I think you talk about the tight ends, right? Like, the tight ends down in that area too. Like, that's when you start to throw your, like you said, if you're not taking Bowers there, the rest of this draft class, especially at tight end, like, there's no reason to really spend capital. Like, you just, that's when you take like your Ben Sinnott's or Theo Johnson's if Darren Waller retires, and Eric All and those guys.
Yeah, Sinnott is definitely on my list, kind of in that range. And when I think about the players I am interested in drafting at cost, it goes back to your point that a lot of them are in that kind of probably late second, third round range, which is, you know, it's odd for me. I generally don't value those picks too much. But because of the depth of this draft and because of how, again, flat, if we're going to keep using that kind of term, this whole situation tends to be, is I actually like, so like Roman Wilson, I mentioned him before, Devontae Walker, I definitely like where he landed, even if you don't like the draft capital, Ben Sinnott, Kamani Vidal, I think that's definitely a target for me, because like you said, he's behind Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. How has that worked out for the Ravens over the last, you know, 4 years or so?
Yeah, how many bad Ravens running backs have we had to put in a DFS lineup or something? Guys exactly. Like Devontae Freeman and, you know, remember Le'Veon 17, number 17 Le'Veon?
I do. What a time to be alive. Tyson Campbell. That was a fun. That was a
yeah, Tyson
that was
Williams. A run.
Tyson's Williams. Yeah.
Had that
Tyson
good week Williams, one and then just died, yeah. Like, was just gone.
Yeah, that was what a time to be alive. So yeah. So like guys like that, you know, I'm getting I don't know about excited about.
And not even a season, like those guys, even if you get like a week where you could play those guys, like, it matters. Like, if you get like a week where you're like, hey, Gus Edwards got hurt, J.K. Dobbins obviously is not getting any touches. Like, Kamani Vidal's just going to have 1 week where I can start him because he's going to get 14 touches, right? And that matters, though.
I like that J.K. Dobbins is obviously getting any touches.
I'm sorry. There's a multiverse where J.K. Dobbins was absolutely the best running back in that class. Like, there's a universe out there that exists where J.K. Dobbins was just incredible and has had an incredible career to this point. It's so sad what happened. He was so good as a prospect,
and he was good whenever he like got touches. He's been good every time he's touched the ball in the NFL, and here we are. Pour some out, but you know, maybe the other Harbaugh is going to save him. That's it for us.
I'll donate my attendance to him. I don't know if they're gonna help him.
Yeah, I'm not using him. He can certainly have him. He can have whichever of my tendencies interested in. I did walk down the stairs yesterday and feel a slight pain in my knee. And I go, if I tear something walking downstairs as I now approach 40, I'm going to be so mad. I will be, of all the dumb things I've done, of all the sports I've played at my size, I should not have been at my size going out and playing soccer for, you know, an hour and a half. That's not something I should have done. If I did all of that stuff and then I hurt my knee walking downstairs, I'm just, that might be it. You might not see me again, Rich. That might break me. But that's it for us. We're done with the rookie rankings. We're done with draft weekend. I'm probably going to go take a nap. I won't lie to you, which you should do is you should go and check out Rich's rookie rankings and dynasty rankings as part of the Sharp Football Draft Kit. You get $5 off using promo code SAVE5. So do that. We also have Todd's confidence rankings and best ball. Those are going to be, you know, fully updated pretty soon here. On the analysis side of the site, we have Ryan's McChrystal's draft grades, Brendan Donahue's too early 2025 mock draft, Warren Sharp's most valuable draft classes, a ton of stuff over at sharpfootballanalysis.com. Check that out. Make sure you go and read everything you would want to know about the draft. We'll be back soon. I don't know when that is yet, but we'll definitely be back soon to talk to you as we head into these more fallow months. So make sure you subscribe, and we'll talk to you real soon.